second off-season edition of Irish Illustrated Overtime. And for the second straight week, I am joined by John Bryce of FootballScoop.com and Irish Illustrated. And this is a timely one, John, because today at Football Scoop, you published a comprehensive and really intriguing article regarding changes coming to college football. We talked about it a little bit last week, in-helmet communication, something that if you're a football fan and think to yourself, wait a minute, don't they have that? They did in the NFL in the 1990s, and they finally have brought it to college football.
Yeah, almost exactly 30 years, or I guess exactly 30 years after the NFL first introduced in-helmet communications between basically coach and quarterback at that time. Defense was added later on. But college is finally moving there. It's been experimented some. Notre Dame worked with it all this spring. Matter of fact, Notre Dame worked with it last December in preparation for the Sun Bowl. But at that point in time, the NCAA had said any teams that wish to utilize in-helmet communications for their bowl games required both teams to be participating. Oregon State did not want to participate during bowl season. Therefore, Notre Dame could not use the in-helmet communication in the actual Sun Bowl victory against the Beavers. It also was not eligible to be used in last year's playoffs, but it was utilized in some of the other games. I think maybe Penn State might have used it in its bowl game. And we've actually seen a couple of FCS teams be among the first college teams to utilize the in-helmet communication during a regular season game. But it's here now, and we're here to talk about it today, T.O.
And in Congress with that, the use of sideline tablets has been passed. You discussed that a few times on Irish Illustrated Insider and at Football Scoop. That is basically, I found some of the restrictions, and I'll let you get into all of this because you had several hours or several dozens of scores of hours, let's say scores of hours of research and phone calls on this. But something I found interesting was that you cannot use the tablets, which is for, as you put it, basically an old school iPad. You cannot use the tablets for analytics on the sideline, which I found kind of funny because they use analytics up in the press box all the time. But I'm sure there's a reason for that. And if you can get into a little bit some of the limitations first with the tablets, and then we'll get to the sideline communication with helmets, because I really think that's what's going to affect games the most this season.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, the in-game teaching with the tablets. A couple of things there. You're capped at 18 tablets that you're allowed to have on game day. That's between the sidelines, the coach's box, everything. You cannot use those tablets then to project what you're seeing on the screen onto a larger screen. So you can't turn your whiteboard on the sideline into a de facto movie screen so that you can show the video in wider scale. They're trying to put some limitations on there. I found it interesting, and I actually just had this pointed out to me as late as last night as I was finishing up this piece for Football Scoop. I had a coach tell me, okay, sure, like, we're a big resource program. We're going to have all 18 tablets on game days. But what about when we're playing this team from the MAC or this G5 team, and they might have 4 tablets? And he was surprised that the NCAA isn't doing more to say, okay, you can have up to 18, but you also can only use the same number that your opponent is going to use. Where's the competitive disadvantage? Again, I had not thought about that. You just think being around programs, okay, 18 tablets, they'll afford 18 tablets. But he seemed to think that would not be the case, that they would have not only a resource advantage year-round, but a resource advantage game day in the number of tablets.
Hey, I was about to ask you why 18. What does that average out to? But obviously they have a reason for that. Now, will that expand or decrease when there are issues? Or as you said, maybe you have to make it so if you're going to use 18, the other program is capable of using 18 or capable of using a dozen or something along those lines.
Yeah, for now, it's just you're allowed up to 18. There's not a minimum. There's not rules. This was passed April 19th, I think, by the NCAA. That's when it was formally adopted. It had been trending that way before then, but it's my understanding – you know, you can go into your game day with 18 and have your people designated and know exactly how they're going to be used on the sideline between coaches and analysts and GAs and in the box, similar structure. And if the other team only has one for offense, one for defense, and one for special teams, then that's just the other team's bad luck. That's where it stands right now.
Yeah, and I encourage everyone to read this story over at footballscoop.com. It's called Communication Breakthrough, College Football Prepares for Massive Changes by John Bryce. But my favorite part is the beginning, is your lead, actually, is expect something to go wrong. Stuff's going to go wrong. You can start explaining how this all works out. But my second favorite part of your story is that SMU is in the ACC and they'll be playing Nevada to start the year, and that's when we'll see some college football helmet communication, as well as Georgia Tech at FSU in Dublin. That does not sound like the normal start of a college football season to me, but that's what we have, and that's when these are going to debut officially.
And of note, this just worked out for us to do this live stream and for us to have that story today on Football Scoop, but it's 100 days from today. Those games are 100 days from today. So for all the people who love college football the way that we do, we're in the 100-day countdown until we see live ball again and until we see this new technology begin to assert itself at the highest levels of college football. Of course, that was Notre Dame preparing for that Aviva kickoff, or that kickoff at Aviva Stadium last year for the Aer Lingus Kickoff Classic, which coincidentally they're going to continue to do. They're working very hard to brand that as basically the modern day Kickoff Classic. We had those old pigskin classics back in the late 80s and early 90s that served as the kickoff of college football a week before the season actually began. That is continuing to be what Ireland is marketing that game toward moving forward. But one of the things I found most interesting, T.O., and it's in the story, is that there's a very prominent team, and this gentleman, this DFO, has worked before at a very high-profile Power 5 institution, one that Notre Dame has played numerous times. And they're going to – they've already contracted a campus IT person, and that guy's going to travel with them, and he's going to be with them at home games, but he's going to travel with them to road games as well as they try to proactively troubleshoot any potential headset communications, any potential issues with the tablets. I think that's maybe most fascinating of that to me, and kind of my lead is that the new most important person arguably on a travel party this college football season is going to be an IT person for some football programs.
Well, hopefully we won't lose Tom the intern to that role at Notre Dame eventually here. That would be a problem for us. But I found it also unique that the ACC is allowed for 15 total helmets, and most Power Four conferences will be 10.
That is correct. Most Power Four conferences, and we'll dive into that a little bit, you're allowed to have 10 devices or 10 in-helmet communicators and players that you can designate on game day. But the ACC, we spoke to people at Football Scoop this week. We talked directly to a DFO and a head equipment manager for an ACC program that said they will go into game days with 15 helmets ready to be utilized. You can only have one player on the field wearing in-helmet communication at any given time. Everyone we spoke to said, obviously, it will be the quarterback on offense. Some programs are possibly going to use their safeties on defense, or a specific safety that won't leave the field perhaps as much as a linebacker. Notre Dame, I believe, began already preparing Jack Kaiser and Drake Bowen this spring with some of the in-helmet communications. That will be the two primary ones. And then a lot of DFOs and a lot of people around college football are wondering how it's going to work on special teams. Yeah. I spoke with some folks around the Notre Dame program. They said probably if they go ahead and utilize the in-helmet communication on special teams, it might only be on punt, and it might just be talking to, say, Davis Sherwood, the shield. So he might be the in-helmet communicator for Notre Dame on special teams.
That's interesting you brought that up, because when I was reading the story and I saw the special – if people wondering here, one special teams player usually also plays offense and defense. That's the problem, where you could get two green dots on the field at the same time. And by the way, it should be a red dot, like in Seinfeld, the red dot on the sweater, the green dot on the helmet, but one green dotted player.
That's weird.
I would have thought – those are nice helmets. I would have thought, or still is possible, Devin Ford could be one as a special teams captain that could have it on playing four roles. Now, Davis Sherwood could also play three or four roles. And Devin Ford might be less likely to come on the field randomly for Notre Dame because of his new status as a backup safety. So that would be something. I'm throwing Devin Ford's name out there officially for Mar DiBiagi if he listens to our podcast here.
Yeah, I think you bring up a great point right there, T.O. The green sticker, and again, this is in our piece on Football Scoop that we've also done with in conjunction with Irish Illustrated, and that is you're designated as being eligible for in-helmet communication by a green sticker on the back of your helmet. It's required. Every program that's going to use the in-helmet communication this season is required in advance of kickoff to designate the players with a green sticker on the back of their helmet. It's just like the penalty will be just like if you accidentally had two number fours on the field at the same time, which we saw in a Notre Dame game this past season. Then it's a dead ball illegal procedure penalty. So it's a 5-yard penalty. Even if one of the guys runs out on the field and his headset is not active, if you've got two green dots on the field at any given time, it is an automatic penalty against the offending football team. And so that's why equipment people that we've talked to, DFOs, directors of football ops that we've talked to over the course of this, and really heated up earlier this month when we were at DFO meetings in Frisco, Texas. That's why so many players are now going to be required to have multiple helmets. That's why Davis Sherwood for Notre Dame would have multiple helmets, or a Drake Bowen or Jack Kaiser could potentially be required to have multiple helmets. Mm-hmm. Probably more so a Drake Bowen than a Jack Kaiser, because Jack Kaiser, if he's on the field, he's going to be the guy you want communicating.
It's interesting. J.D. Bertrand just missed out on this. He could have been the first Mike linebacker because he never came off the field anyway. I saw in your story, a lot of people said, we can't give it to our Mike because our Mike might come right off the field on second and 15 if we have a good play. So that is, there's another thing to work around. I'm going to grab a quick question because George Gipp asked, doesn't this seem too high-tech and weird? And he said he's being sarcastic, but he made a very good point. Like, I mean, the NFL has had this. What I find interesting about it is it's a somewhat arbitrary number of 10 people, correct? And that's where moving all the helmets back and forth. You would think this is going to be constant change and evaluation. I know it's a good normal number to start with, 10 people. And you figure the backup quarterback is one as well, right? So he hears everything.
Exactly.
Then I find it interesting. Do you have would Joe Alt have had it? Or would you rather have it in a young guy like Charles Jagasa in these situations? Does he need it more than Joe Alt would? Would the center be a guy? I find it really intriguing because the center's not playing multiple roles either. He is playing on the field at that time.
Yeah, I know. Would it be an Ashton Craig, as valuable as he is, as football intelligent as he is, and the way he's continued to develop? I would think Joe Alt would have been a guy that it could have been utilized with, because he not only, as the coach just said, he not only knew what he was supposed to do on every play, but they point blank said he knew what all other 10 of his teammates on offense were supposed to do on any given play. That's how well versed he was in the Notre Dame offense and the Notre Dame playbook. But again, it is going to be a lot of variables that have to be worked out. And being at those meetings and sitting in on some of those private meetings that were held, there's a belief, particularly as it pertains to special teams, that a year from now the rule may be modified to allow more than one person on special teams to have the helmet. And again, I think in speaking with some different programs, there may be some teams that utilize it on offense and defense, but don't elect to utilize it on special teams. We mentioned that some programs are going to travel an IT guy, or on their home games already have an IT guy designated to be available that game day. We also know of some other programs that are going ahead and doing the extra helmets, and they'll have a guy test out multiple helmets pregame to ensure that they don't have those issues. I just think it's sort of a fascinating look. But as I noted in the story, Mike Denbrock was really excited about it. There are some coaches on both sides of the line. There are some who believe this is going to slow the game down, but there are others who believe, no, this can absolutely speed it up.
Yeah.
There's no signals to deal with. I'm in the quarterback's ear that much more quickly. He can hand signal if he needs to tell the guys what to do, or if they're in a huddle, and then go from there. One other thing to note. The communication cuts off regardless at 15 seconds of the play or when the offensive team snaps the football. So there's no communication at that 15-second mark or after the ball is live, and that will be done by a third party.
Yeah, I was just about to bring that up. It's a third-party moderator, so you don't have to worry about that. Follow-up question is 15-second cutoff. This is the only way I can think it can make the game go slower, because I don't think it goes slower at all with this. What goes slow is when Notre Dame ran the scan, they had to look to the sideline every time with 11 players looking back and forth. If it's cut off at 15 seconds, that doesn't mean your communication has to cut off at 15 seconds, because then you can go to hand signals.
Right.
And then you can go looking to the sideline. So that would be the argument for, especially in year one, when we're not good at this yet, we could be snapping the ball a lot. The team I cover doesn't often snap the ball when 15 seconds are left on the play clock anyway. But I do understand that would be, it doesn't cut off communication, it cuts off electronic communication.
Yeah, it cuts off electronic communication. And look, I think it's going to give the offense a chance to dictate tempo even more, be it speeding up or slowing down. Now, look, I think it's a tremendous advantage defensively for Notre Dame when you have a guy as advanced as Al Golden, who sees the game as well as he does, who's sort of known as a master tactician. I think that's going to probably invite some of Notre Dame's opponents to be butting up against that 15-second deadline, because Al Golden is so sharp. This defense is so veteran. Jack Kaiser is working on a third degree for Notre Dame or has 3 degrees for Notre Dame. So for an offense, I think an offense facing Notre Dame's defense maybe is not going to be as beneficial as it will be in some of its other games because of what Notre Dame has and presents defensively.
From Notre Dame perspective, it's very interesting because you mentioned Kizer. I would think Jack Kizer is the guy that doesn't need it, and Xavier Watts is the guy that doesn't need it. So maybe Drake Bowen is the guy that needs it. Maybe Rod Hurd, a projected starting safety, who is the one that has the least experience in this defense because he was not playing in the spring. Maybe that helps Rod Hurd in game number one and two. You know, there's, of course, then he has to relay all the communication, but it's an interesting dynamic because Jack Kizer has been relaying information for a long time without the need of this.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. This just makes Jack Kizer even more of an on-field coach, even more of an extension for Al Golden. Again, that's why I view it as a potentially tremendous benefit for the Notre Dame defense. Again, you already have one of the best returning defenses in college football, returning super veteran group on all three levels of the defense, and as smart of a football player as there is anywhere in college football in Jack Kizer. Those are fascinating components to me. Coach Tom is the primary supplier. Notre Dame tested out a couple of different companies. Coach Tom has more of the industry than anyone else, but the other company, the name escapes me, but it's actually the company that does the in-helmet communications for the NFL. And so those are the two companies and the only two companies you can choose from at the NCAA level to supply your in-helmet communication to you.
I found it interesting. We have a sarcastic comment here, but it's something like I would have said from Fighting Irish Fan 91, maybe this will help with fewer than 10 men on the field at times as well. So and when you mentioned having two number fours on the field happen once, I think anyone that watched the Notre Dame 2012 season knows that BCS championship appearance was made possible because no one ever caught the two number twos on the field on a game-winning possible field goal attempt by Pittsburgh in overtime. Yeah, so communication would go that way, though, wouldn't it? Couldn't someone yell? Now, 15 seconds, we know for a fact Notre Dame didn't notice they noticed after 15 seconds.
Right. Because
that's been our argument. This is the Ohio State conversation I'm having again, of course. Correct. They notice after 15 seconds because we always said, jumping off sides costs you 6 inches, all those things. So that's what makes the 15 seconds interesting. It still then does break down. You wonder if they're having trouble at second number 18, if the coordinator says, all right, look to the sideline now. We have to continue this. We're still looking at something. That it's going to be so much different in week 5 and 12 than it is in week 1 for every program.
For every program. And whatever it evolves into this year, it's already, again, the very strong indication that those DFO meetings were there will already be changes next year. They point blank said that it's already being floated and already in open discussion to have it modified, at least for special teams, if not to potentially open it up to having two players on each side of the ball eligible for in-helmet communication. Obviously, there are teams that already have worked it all spring. Again, this wasn't formally passed until April 19th, but Marcus Freeman challenge everything. He loves that. He is very proactive in that. They utilized multiple systems this spring, and they worked the in-helmet communication this spring to be more prepared. One thing I think that's going to be fascinating with this, T.O., is a lot of times those dress rehearsal scrimmages that serve as basically the very last Saturday practice before your season starts. Those, in speaking with people for this story around college football, those are now going to take on even added importance. Yes, they're dry runs, and you have guys getting people ready. You've got the people assigned their sideline obligations. If you're responsible for getting the 11 men ready for kickoff coverage, those dry run walkthrough scrimmages that they have, that almost every team has the last Saturday before its season started, now it was pointed out to me, you will have those much more involved with practicing the headset communication, especially if you're opening your season at home. You'll do that dry run walkthrough in your stadium to see how that's going to go.
Your conversation with Mike Denbrock I found interesting because, well, he's a self-deprecating guy, but as he said, I can get them information as long as I don't mumble my words too much that everybody can understand. But he kind of drove the point home. It's like he can just say, hey, it doesn't have to be over communication. It can be Riley, remember the weak side here, or especially Kenny, Steve, CJ, remember what you're looking for here. It doesn't have to be filling their heads with all the options of a play. We talked about this all day on Friday. This is exactly where you look for that. And then it moves on. I think that's going to be the proper way to handle it rather than information overflow in a headset.
Yeah. And one thing that, again, I wasn't smart enough to figure this out. I had a coach at a power institution pointed out to me Wednesday night. And that is a couple of these new technological components have some coaches thinking it may induce even a little bit more laziness or a little bit more lack of attention to detail from some of their players who are going to be counting on being told what to do in the helmet or by their quarterback once he gets the message relayed via the helmet, or the tablets that are being utilized on the sidelines. Was pointed out to me, well, you have some guys that you know aren't watching enough film through the week. Now they're going to believe they can watch even less film because it's going to be right there on a tablet, and they're going to be able to be shown in the game exactly what they need to be doing. So I found that interesting that there were some coaches out there who believe there are a couple of negatives, or that there are a couple of aspects to it that could cause players not to prepare quite as much as they should over the course of the week.
Well, anyone that's ever left the study hall and tried to finish his or her studying, walking through the hallway, thinking they were going to remember that, that's what would be the equivalent of a football player not studying during the week, because there's going to be a lot going on, especially at Kyle Field on those sidelines, for people to try to remember what they have to remember just because they looked down and saw it on a tablet.
Yeah, and this will make the work of the advanced teams that every program utilizes for road games. Notre Dame, as we know, will send its equipment truck, and usually its DFO and its head equipment manager, out on the road multiple days early in advance of a game. Now with this headset communication, it's going to be even more important that your advance party gets there early, or when you do your summer scouts and you do your site visits. Now those site visits won't just have, okay, where do I need to bring my equipment to get the team ready on game day? Where's our locker room? But what is our setup going to be for in-helmet and tablet communications on game day now as well? So that will be one of particular importance for Notre Dame as it prepares to open its season at Kyle Field, because that's a spot it's not been before. Everything about that game is new for Notre Dame.
JB, before we wrap up, I want to move on to a third topic, and we've discussed this at our Irish Illustrated Insider podcast. You and I discussed this here last week. Early June signing period, the vote is pending. It's coming, and you've mentioned it's being fought hard. It is officially being fought harder every day now, and that's, they're trying to dissuade that from passing.
Yeah, and I think this will be our next show for us, T.O., whether it's next week or before the end of the month or by the end of the month. This is maybe the topic that's starting to dominate college football even more than these technological changes, and that is there going to be a June signing day? With the exception of one person this week, almost everyone that I've spoken to expects it to pass, even if they're not for it. And we talked to four college football GMs this week, as well as a coach from the ACC and another NCAA head coach. This June signing period, if it passes, would take effect June of 25 for the 26 class. And you would see the June signing date. I've got the notes here, but you would see the June signing date around June 25, 26, 27. And that would be allowing players to sign for that 26 class. There's obviously concerns what it would do to the high school game, how many players would start to sit out their senior seasons of high school. A couple of other things to note that also will be voted on later this month is making the month of July an entire dead period. There's extreme confidence that that's going to pass, period. The only question at this point seems to be, will it pass and be enacted for this coming summer, July of 24, or will it not take effect until July of 25? That's not a huge change for most programs. It's dead right now through July 24th, I believe, this year. But Notre Dame, for example, is scheduled, I think, to have a junior day in that final week of July. If it gets passed this year and enacted for this July, then Notre Dame would obviously need to move that junior day up into the month of June. Another thing to be mindful of, the December signing day is expected to have changes to it as well. They're trying to get it out of that third week of December. The proposal now would have signing day starting this coming December be December 4th for the early high school signing day. You would have December 4th, 5th, and 6th to sign. Then the portal would open after that, and you would have portal kids able to visit and then sign after that. So that's the big differentiator. We'll have more on this. I'm going to have another in-depth piece on this for Football Scoop from all those conversations that we've had as a staff over the last particularly 10 days and talking with GMs around the sport. But those are the big things on the calendar. Those are the things that are being voted on this month. And one way or the other, the signing day is going to change. But again, point blank told by Power Conference GM within the last 48 hours, yes, I expect the June and July measures to absolutely pass. little bit maybe closer to 50-50 on the December measure. And speaking with a couple of more of my colleagues around the country who cover Big Ten programs, again, was emphasized to me yesterday. Yes, this program fully expects those dates to be adopted. Those dates in reference in that particular conversation were the June signing period and the July, the entire month of July being a dead period.
When you told me the first Wednesday in December, I immediately thought to myself, that's right about when Notre Dame lost about 10 players to the transfer portal. In fact, I just did a quick Google search and Rico Flores left on December 4th. the exact date you said, that's a little coincidence there. But when you mentioned that in Congress with that they're going to move the transfer portal opening, then it makes total sense. Because otherwise, you were just looking at absolute chaos.
Yeah, and again, we'll save some of the topics for our next show, but it will change when portal guys actually come on visits as well, which is going to be a little bit of bad news, especially if you've been eliminated from the playoffs at that point in time, because now there will be some official portal visits coming like January 5th, January 4th, January 6th on the new calendar that's being proposed.
I'm going to ask one question here from Evan Martin. Usually on the show, we don't take random questions, but this, I think, ties into our topic of the day. With A&M having new coordinators on both sides of the ball, how challenging will that be for Notre Dame, he means? How does ND approach that? Do they review footage from their previous teams? Yes, they do. That is what they do. They review footage from their previous teams. But I ask you, Colin Klein and Jay Bateman installing new things, and now they have this on the opening game where Al Golden, as you said, Notre Dame's defense has an advantage here. Mike Denbrock has done this at LSU. Yeah. There is an advantage there a little bit for Notre Dame.
Yeah, I think Notre Dame overall has an advantage. I do think these new technological components are an advantage for first-year programs. Colin Klein is going to be going into battle, so to speak, that last Saturday of August with Texas A&M against Notre Dame. It's going to be his first live situation with Connor Wigman at quarterback, and he's going to be able to have some direct communication with him.
Yeah,
I think you've got to view that as a plus in terms of how Notre Dame prepares it. You got to remember Notre Dame tried to hire Colin Klein last January or February, whenever it was, before deciding to promote Jerry Parker and seeing what he was able to do. So Notre Dame already has a great familiarity with what Colin Klein likes to do from an offensive standpoint. But yes, Notre Dame is looking at Kansas State film, and Notre Dame has already looked at K-State film, and Notre Dame has looked at the Texas A&M spring game, and Notre Dame is looking at all the video footage it has, particularly of Connor Wigman, who started the first four games last year for A&M, and I think in 2022 maybe was a freshman All-American for the Aggies at the quarterback position, and would have started all last season had he not gone down with a season-ending injury in the fourth game. So that's how Notre Dame approaches it. And in terms of Mike Elko, yeah, Jay Bateman's the DC, but Mike Elko's running that defense. So
yeah,
you'll look very closely at what you faced last year at Duke and what Mike Elko has consistently put on video through his years as a defensive coordinator.
I was going to say the moment Mike Elko was hired, I thought, well, that's the issue, because that's his defense. And I know our Tim Priester has made some commentary about North Carolina's defenses under Jay Bateman before in the past, but I don't think you're going to see a whole lot of North Carolina woven in to the Mike Elko Texas A&M defense.
No, that's Mike Elko's defense, emphatically Mike Elko's defense. We'll see if he elects to call it. I don't think that's his plan right now, but there's still some head coaches out there that are electing to call it, and we'll see how Mike Elko approaches that.
Great stuff, JB. Looks like we might be back again next Thursday. If not, Irish Illustrated Overtime will be back again next Thursday with a guest and a topic. Before that, JB will be JB, Tim Priester, Pete Sampson, and myself will have an Irish Illustrated Insider Monday podcast. Expect to see Overtime on next Thursday.
Yep.
John Bryce of FootballScoop.com. I'm Tim O'Malley of Irish Illustrated. Thanks for watching.